Chapter 2, Movement and Forms of Maneuver. This chapter discusses movement formations, movement techniques, and the five forms of maneuver. Movement formations. A movement formation is an ordered arrangement of forces for a specific purpose and describes the general configuration of a unit on the ground, ADP 3-90. Movement formations allow a unit to move on the battlefield based on the terrain and enemy threat. Terrain characteristics and visibility determine the actual arrangement and location of the unit's personnel and vehicles within a given formation. There are seven different movement formations: column, line, wedge, echelon, left or right, V, diamond, box. Each movement formation has its advantages and disadvantages. A unit may employ a series of movement formations during a movement or maneuver based on changing terrain or threat. Commanders consider the advantages and disadvantages that each formation has in the areas of command and control, firepower orientation, ability to mass fires, and flexibility. The use of standard formations allows units to transition from one formation to another, giving additional flexibility when adjusting to changes in the mission variables. Movement formations describe how combat or security elements maneuver in relation to each other and the main body. By designating the movement formation planned for use, units establish the geographic relationship between units. Indicate probable reactions once an enemy force makes contact with the formation. Indicate the level of security desired. Establish the preponderant orientation of subordinate weapon systems. Posture friendly forces for the attack. Column formation. The column formation is a movement formation with elements arranged one behind another. A unit moves in column formation when the unit does not anticipate early contact, the objective is distant, and speed and control are critical. The location of direct fire systems within the column reflects the column's length and the range fans of those systems. Normally, the lead element uses a traveling overwatch technique while the following units are in traveling formation. A column formation provides the best formation to move large forces quickly, especially with limited routes and limited visibility. Makes enemy contact with a small part of the total force while facilitating control and allowing the unit to quickly mass forces. Provides a base for easy transition to other formations. Works in restricted terrain. There are also disadvantages to using a column formation. These include: units can only immediately apply the majority of the column's firepower on the column's flanks. The length of the column affects movement and terrain management, possibly inadvertently bypassing enemy units or positions and exposing the unit's flanks. Running head-on into an enemy deployed perpendicular to the column's direction of movement. Restricted terrain may limit the ability of friendly forces to maneuver if contact is made to the front of the formation. Line formation. A line formation is a movement formation in which elements move abreast of each other. A unit typically employs this formation when assaulting an objective because it concentrates firepower to the front in the direction of movement. A line formation also facilitates speed and shock in closing with an enemy force. Allows the coverage of wide frontages. Facilitates the occupation of attack by fire or support by fire positions. There are also disadvantages of a line formation. Provides less flexibility of maneuver than other formations since it does not distribute units in depth. Linear deployment allows a unit deployed on line to bring only limited firepower to bear on either flank. Provides limited or no reserve. Limits overwatch forces. Limits control of a unit using a line formation in restricted terrain or under conditions of limited visibility. Wedge formation. The wedge formation is a movement formation with one lead element and the trail elements are paired off abreast of each other on the flanks. Units use this formation to attack an enemy appearing to the front and flanks. Any unit can conduct a wedge formation. If there are an even number of maneuver elements, one side will be longer than the other. Leaders designate which side they want longer by directing a heavy side. For example, if a leader said they wanted the unit in a wedge formation heavy left, then the left side of the unit would have more elements than the right side of the element. A unit uses the wedge when contact with an enemy force is possible or expected, but the enemy force's location and dispositions are vague. It is the preferred formation for a movement to contact in an organization with three subordinate maneuver units because it initiates contact with one unit while retaining two other subordinate, uncommitted units positioned to maneuver and further develop the situation. Within the wedge, subordinate units employ the formation best suited to the terrain, visibility, and likelihood of contact. Employing a wedge formation provides maximum firepower forward and allows units to use a large portion of their firepower on the flanks. Allows rapid crossing of open terrain when enemy contact is not expected. Facilitates control. Allows for rapid changes in the direction of movement. Facilitates the rapid change to other movement formations. The primary disadvantages to the wedge formation are that it requires sufficient maneuver space or multiple routes for dispersion laterally and in depth. Lacks ease of control in restricted terrain or poor visibility. Echelon formation. An echelon formation is a movement formation with elements arranged on an angle to the left or to the right of the direction of attack. Echelon left, echelon right. This formation provides focused firepower forward and to the flank of the direction of the echelon. It facilitates control in open areas. It provides minimal security to the opposite flank in the direction of the echeloning. A unit with knowledge of potential enemy locations can use an echelon formation to deploy subordinate ground elements diagonally left or right, or as a way to work within a higher echelon movement formation. Units operating on the flank of a larger formation commonly use this formation. An echelon formation facilitates control in open terrain, allows the concentration of the unit's firepower forward and to the flank in the direction of the echelon, allows forces not in contact to maneuver against known enemy forces because all elements will not simultaneously make contact. The primary disadvantages of this formation are difficult to maintain control over the unit in restricted terrain. Lacks security or firepower on the opposite side of the echelon. V formation. A V formation is a movement formation with two elements abreast and one or more elements trailing. If there are more elements after the trail element in the V formation, the trail elements can be in front or behind the main body. This arrangement is suited for an advance against a known threat to the front. Units use this formation when they know the enemy force's location and disposition and expect enemy contact. It provides maximum firepower forward and good firepower to the flanks, but the firepower on the flanks is less than that provided by the wedge. Facilitates a continued maneuver after making contact and a rapid transition to the assault. Allows a unit to change quickly to a line, wedge, or column formation. The primary disadvantages to this formation include reorientation in the direction of movement, such as a 90-degree turn, are more difficult than using the wedge. Control is difficult in restricted terrain and under limited visibility conditions. Lead element masks fires of the trail element. Requires sufficient maneuver space for dispersion laterally and in depth. Diamond formation. A diamond formation is a movement formation with one element leading, one element positioned on each flank, and the remaining elements to the rear. The non-security units of the diamond usually move in a column formation inside of the diamond. It is most effective during approach marches, exploitations, or pursuits when the unit has only general knowledge about the enemy. Advantages of employing a diamond formation include allowing units to maneuver to either flank immediately, regardless of which subordinate element makes enemy contact. Facilitates making enemy contact with the smallest possible force, yet provides all-around security. Provides firepower to the front and flanks. Changes easily and quickly to another formation. Facilitates speed of movement while remaining easy to control. provides an uncommitted force for use as a reserve. The primary disadvantages of this formation are that it requires sufficient maneuver space or multiple routes for dispersion laterally and in depth. Requires four subordinate maneuver elements. Box formation. The box formation is a movement formation with elements arranged in a box or square or two elements up and two elements back. This formation is only used when the unit has four security or combat elements. It is a flexible formation providing equal firepower in all directions. This formation can cause up to 50% of the force becoming decisively engaged simultaneously, thereby limiting the combat power available to maneuver against an enemy force. The box formation arranges the unit with two forward and two trail maneuver elements. Units with only three subordinate maneuver elements cannot adopt the box formation unless reinforced with an additional maneuver element. The subordinate elements of the box usually move in a column formation within the box formation. Units often use this formation when executing an approach march, exploitation, or pursuit when they have only general knowledge about the enemy. Employing a box formation allows a unit to change quickly and easily to any other formation, facilitates rapid movement yet still provides all-around security, provides firepower to the front and flanks, maintains control more easily than a line formation. Using the box formation also has disadvantages. These include the requirement for sufficient maneuver space or multiple routes for dispersion. At battalion and company echelons, the possibility exists of enemy units massing on one element at a time as the presence of other friendly forces can mask other elements' direct fires. Movement techniques. Units use the movement formations in conjunction with three movement techniques: traveling, traveling overwatch, and bounding overwatch. Movement techniques limit the unit's exposure to enemy fire and position the unit to react to enemy contact. Units select the appropriate movement technique based on the chance of enemy contact. While moving, individual soldiers and vehicles use the terrain to protect themselves when enemy contact is possible or expected. They use natural cover and concealment to avoid enemy fires. Soldiers and vehicle crews take active countermeasures such as using obscuration and direct and indirect fire to suppress or obscure suspected enemy positions. Cross open areas quickly and avoid large open areas, especially areas surrounded by high ground or terrain that can cover and conceal enemy forces. Avoid possible kill zones because it is easier to cross difficult terrain than to fight enemy forces on unfavorable terms. Do not silhouette themselves against the skyline. Do not move directly forward from a concealed firing position. Traveling. Traveling is a movement technique used when speed is necessary and contact with enemy forces is not likely. All elements of the unit move simultaneously. Commanders or small unit leaders are located where they can best control the situation. Trailing elements may move in parallel columns to shorten the column and reaction time. Traveling overwatch. Traveling overwatch is a movement technique used when contact with enemy forces is possible. A short distance, which varies with the terrain, separates the lead element and trailing element. The trailing element moves at variable speeds and may pause for short periods to overwatch the lead element. It controls its movement based on the terrain and the lead element. The rear element overwatches at such a distance that if enemy forces engage the lead element, it will not prevent the rear element from firing or moving to support the lead element. Bounding overwatch. Bounding overwatch is a movement technique used when contact with enemy forces is expected. The unit moves by bounds. One element always halts in position to overwatch another element while it moves. The overwatching element positions to support the moving unit by fire or maneuver. Units use the bounding overwatch movement technique when expecting to make contact with enemy forces. There are two variations of this technique: alternating bounds and successive bounds. In both cases, the overwatching elements cover the bounding elements from covered or concealed positions with good observation and fields of fire against possible enemy positions. The Support by Fire positions also offer protection for stationary weapons platforms. They can immediately support the bounding elements with fires or maneuver against the enemy if the bounding elements make contact. Unless they make contact en route, the bounding elements move via covered and concealed routes into the next set of Support by Fire positions. Leaders base the length of a bound on the terrain and the range of overwatching weapons. They can use the uncommitted part of their forces whenever needed as part of an immediate and controlled reaction to any threat to the bounding force. If the unit uses alternate bounds, the bounding element moves forward, halts, and occupies a support by fire position. The stationary element always covers the bounding element's movement, halt, and occupation of the bounding element's support by fire position. The bounding element advances past the stationary element, takes an overwatch position, and becomes the new forward element. The former stationary element now becomes the bounding element, advances past the stationary element, and occupies a new support by fire position. This method is usually more rapid than successive bounds. If a unit uses successive bounds, the lead element covered by the trail element advances and occupies a support by fire position. The rear element advances to a support by fire position abreast of the lead element and halts. The lead element moves to the next position and the move continues. Only one element moves at a time, and the rear element avoids advancing beyond the lead element. 5 Forms of Maneuver. Forms of maneuver are distinct tactical combinations of fire and movement with a unique set of doctrinal characteristics that differ primarily in the relationship between the maneuvering force and the enemy, ADP 3-90. A form is a broad way of describing a scheme of maneuver. Units generally use the types of offensive and defensive operations to explain the overarching operation, whereas the forms of maneuver are the basis for courses of action. Combined arms organizations accomplish their mission by synchronizing the warfighting functions to execute these forms of maneuver. Combined arms is the synchronized and simultaneous application of arms to achieve an effect greater than if each element was used separately or sequentially. Understanding the characteristics of an assigned area and the enemy's dispositions helps units determine the best form of maneuver. A single operation may contain multiple forms of maneuver, such as a frontal attack to clear a security area followed by a penetration to create a gap in enemy defenses. A form of maneuver can also be used in the defense. For example, in a mobile defense, the striking force conducts an envelopment to destroy the enemy. Typically, a higher headquarters does not dictate what form of maneuver a subordinate should use. But if the situation warrants, a higher echelon may constrain a subordinate force to a specific form of maneuver. The successful execution of any forms of maneuver requires trained forces capable of shifting their formations quickly in response to a changing enemy situation. Frontal attack. A frontal attack is a form of maneuver in which an attacking force seeks to destroy a weaker enemy force or fix a larger enemy force in place over a broad front. An attacking force uses a frontal attack to overrun a weak enemy force. They normally employ a frontal attack to clear enemy security forces, overwhelm a shattered enemy force during an exploitation or pursuit, fix enemy forces in place as part of another operation, conduct a reconnaissance in force. A frontal attack is necessary when assailable flanks do not exist. Frontal attack maintain continuous pressure along the entire front until a breach occurs or the attacking forces succeed in pushing the enemy forces back. Consequently, units rarely conduct frontal attack when they lack overwhelming combat power unless fixing the enemy is vital to a larger operation's success. Organization of forces. There is no unique organization of forces associated with a frontal attack. Units executing a frontal attack organize into a security force, a main body, and a reserve. The mission variables dictate the specific task organization of a unit. Control measures. Units conducting a frontal attack may not require any additional control measures beyond those established to control the overall mission. This includes, at a minimum, an assigned area and an objective. Units can also use any other control measure necessary to control the frontal attack, including attack positions, lines of departure, phase lines, assault positions, limits of advance, directions of attack or axes of advance for every maneuver unit. Planning a frontal attack. It is seldom possible for a unit to exert sufficient pressure to overwhelm an enemy force using a frontal attack, since it strikes the enemy force along a significant portion of the enemy's front. There are many considerations for a force to execute a frontal attack. These considerations can include a friendly force tasked to fix the enemy force in place, terrain that dictates the unit cannot execute another form of maneuver. Friendly forces have overwhelming combat power to quickly finish the enemy in position. A unit's planning efforts should reflect these considerations. When considering employing a frontal attack as a shaping operation, units also consider other means for fixing the enemy force in position, such as feints or demonstrations, and employing indirect fires to mitigate risk. Executing a frontal attack. Units conducting frontal attack advance on a broad front, normally with their subordinate ground maneuver elements abreast, except for the reserve. The security force clears enemy reconnaissance, surveillance, and target acquisition assets while the main body advances. An attacking force seeks to fix enemy forces and gain positional advantage to destroy them using maneuver. If an attacking unit discovers a gap in the enemy force's defenses, friendly units seek to exploit that weakness and disrupt the integrity of the enemy force's defense. Units assess the situation to ensure that enemy forces are not luring them into an engagement area. Units synchronize the exploitation to prevent counterattacking enemy forces from isolating and destroying successful subordinate elements of the attacking friendly force. When units conducting a frontal attack can no longer advance, they transition to a defensive posture. Once set in the defense, they continue to perform reconnaissance of enemy positions to locate gaps or assailable flanks and may assist the forward passage of lines of follow-on forces. Penetration. A penetration is a form of maneuver in which a force attacks on a narrow front. Destroying the continuity of a defense enables the enemy force's subsequent isolation and defeat in detail. The penetration extends from the enemy force's disruption zone through the battle zone into the enemy support zone. Units employ a penetration when weak spots are identified in enemy defenses through reconnaissance, surveillance, and security operations. Conditions do not permit an envelopment, such as the enemy having no assailable flank. Organization of forces. Penetrating a defensive position requires overwhelming combat power at the point of penetration and combat superiority to continue the momentum of the attack. Units allocate combat power and designate control measures to fix enemy reserves and long-range weapons in their current locations and to isolate enemy forces within the area selected for penetration. Penetrations organize into a breach force, support force, assault force, and a reserve. These elements exist for each location the force is required to penetrate. Units should not withhold combat power from the initial penetration to conduct additional penetrations unless there is sufficient combat power to ensure the success of the initial penetration. Breach force. The breach force is responsible for executing the initial penetration of the enemy's defense. The breach force is typically the main effort until the breach is complete. Depending on the situation, the breach force may also be responsible for widening the gaps of the initial penetration. Support force. The support force is responsible for fixing defending enemy forces along a broad front to allow the breach and assault forces to penetrate along a narrow front. The support force is a supporting effort to the breach and assault forces. Assault force. The assault force is responsible for seizing the penetration objectives on the far side of the penetration. It is typically the main effort. Depending on the situation, the assault force may have a follow and support mission to the breach force. Reserve. The use of the reserve avoids diverting the assault element from attacking the final objective of the penetration. Units assign subordinate units the tactical mission tasks of follow and support or follow and assume to ensure rapid exploitation of initial success. Control measures. A unit conducting a penetration normally has a narrower assigned area than a unit conducting a frontal attack. The minimum control measures for a penetration are an assigned area to every maneuver unit, axis of advance or a direction of attack. A line of departure, LD, or line of contact, LC. The time of the attack or time of assault. Phase lines. An objective. Limits of advance, LOAs, to control and synchronize attacks. Units can use BHLs instead of LOAs if they know where they will likely commit their follow and assume forces. Checkpoints. Graphic control measures associated with breaching operations, such as points of breach and lanes. Probable lines of deployment. Support by fire positions and attack by fire positions. Fire support coordination measures. The lateral boundaries of a unit or units assigned the main effort are narrow to help maintain the mass necessary at the area of penetration. Units locate LOAs far enough beyond the enemy's main defensive positions to complete their breach of those positions. They adjust existing boundaries to accommodate the new situation if operations result in opportunities to exploit success and pursue retreating enemy forces or expand the penetration. Planning a penetration. The success of a penetration depends primarily on a coordinated and synchronized plan executed at a high tempo against comparatively weak enemy defenses. The terrain behind an area selected to penetrate must allow follow-on forces to proceed from the breach to a deeper objective. The depth of an enemy position and the relative strength of attacking echelons determine the width of a penetration. The availability of artillery, air support, and other combat enablers for an attacking force helps units determine relative combat power. A wider gap allows friendly forces to pass through more quickly and in large-sized formations, making it more difficult for enemy forces to close the gap. The deeper a penetration, the easier it is to expose an enemy force's flanks by the breach, and the less likely it is that an enemy force will be in a position to restore its front by falling back. Plans for penetrating a defensive position include isolating, suppressing, and destroying by fire enemy forces in an area selected for the penetration. These plans should also address how to isolate the area of penetration from support or reinforcement by enemy forces located outside the area. A critical part of a plan is positioning friendly assets so that units can mask the effects of their combat power to accomplish these results without giving away the location of the penetration. The majority of units and assets are in positions where the effects of their combat power apply to the area selected for penetration. Plans for the penetration normally have three phases: breaching the enemy force's main defensive positions, widening the gap created to secure the penetration's flanks, seizing an objective, and subsequently exploiting the success of the penetration. Planning the sequence of these phases depends on the situation. In some situations, if there are weaknesses or gaps in an enemy force's front, it is possible for armored forces to breach the enemy force's defenses and proceed straight to an objective. Simultaneously, infantry units could conduct local envelopment and exploitation operations. Supporting efforts for outside the area of penetration are normally to isolate enemy forces on the flanks of the penetration. Synchronizing the effects of rotary and fixed-wing aircraft, artillery fires, and obscuration to delay or disrupt repositioning forces are examples of supporting efforts. Units usually attempt to penetrate the enemy's defensive positions along a boundary between two enemy units because defenses tend to be less effective along a boundary. Units plan penetrating through the enemy force's defensive positions in enough depth so enemy forces cannot re-establish a viable defense in rearward positions. Units do not divert the strength of attacking forces to widening the gap to secure the flanks of the penetration until the forces achieve sufficient depth. However, plans should address contingencies, such as enemy counterattacks against the penetration's flanks. If the unit culminates at any point during the operation or actions to take if the penetration is unsuccessful. Plans provide for uninterrupted support to attacking elements as they close with the enemy and accomplish their mission. Executing a penetration. After the initial breach of the enemy force's defense, the situation determines the sequence of the remaining two phases. If enemy forces are in a weak position, it may be possible for the lead attacking force to seize the penetration's final objective while simultaneously widening the initial breach. Breaching the enemy's main defensive positions. The support force fixes the enemy along a broad front to allow the breach and assault forces to penetrate on a relatively narrow front. The support force can accomplish this by adjusting its lateral boundaries to the point or points of penetration, or by extending its boundaries to fix the enemy on a broader front. This allows the force conducting the penetration to focus overwhelming combat power at that location. The support force locates where it can suppress the enemy for the breaching and the assaulting forces. The breach force establishes a lane or lanes to facilitate the assault force operation. The breach force can also be assigned near objectives to prepare the passing of the assault force. Supporting efforts focus on the remainder of the enemy forces in their current positions and isolate the objective from enemy forces. These operations prevent enemy forces from disengaging to reinforce enemy units opposing the main effort. Units track the battle's progress to ensure that subordinate forces penetrate entirely through the enemy forces' main defensive positions and not just the enemy forces' disruption zone. Enemy forces normally try to slow down or stop a breach to gain time to react to the changing situation. The attacking unit must rapidly exploit and reinforce success. The attacker masses resources and additional units as necessary to ensure completing the penetration through the enemy force's defensive positions, widening the gap to secure the penetration's flanks. Once the attacking force penetrates the main defenses, it begins to widen the penetration of the enemy force's defensive positions by conducting a series of shallow envelopments or attacks by fire. The task of widening the gap of the penetration is normally assigned to a follow and support force. Commanders also have the option of committing their reserve to accomplish that task. If the reserve is committed, the commander must designate another reserve, or the unit will not have the forces available to commit a reserve to another operation. Units plan to meet enemy counterattacks by shifting fires or committing reserves or follow and assume forces. They can use obstacles on the flanks of the penetration as a combat multiplier to assist in defeating any local enemy counterattacks and to maintain the force's tempo. Seizing an objective and subsequent exploitation. The assault force attacks objectives to destroy the continuity of the enemy's defensive position. Frequently, that objective is so far from the area of penetration that the unit or units initially conducting the penetration cannot seize it without pausing. In that event, units plan to commit the reserve or attack with the assault force through the breaching force early. Exploitation beyond the objective tends to be executed by divisions and corps. The exact force mix depends on the mission variables, while the armored, striker, and aviation forces are generally suited for subsequent exploitation. Divisions and corps may initiate an attack by simultaneously launching two or more convergent penetrations against weak locations on the enemy front. Often, this method of attack helps isolate an extremely strong enemy defense. Units assign supporting efforts to contain any enemy positions that may influence the penetration. Envelopment. Envelopment is a form of maneuver in which an attacking force avoids an enemy's principal defense by attacking along an assailable flank. An envelopment avoids the enemy force's strength, the enemy's front, where the effects of enemy fires and obstacles are generally the greatest and attacks the enemy to the flank or rear. Envelopments force the enemy to fight in two or more directions simultaneously to meet the converging efforts of an attack. Envelopments focus either on seizing terrain, destroying enemy forces, or interdicting enemy withdrawal routes. Units prefer to conduct an envelopment instead of a penetration or a frontal attack because generally the flanks of the defending forces are weaker and provide the attacking forces the most opportunities to destroy the enemy force. The main effort focuses on attacking an assailable flank. If no assailable flank is available, the attacking force creates one through the conduct of a penetration. The three variations of the envelopment are single envelopment, double envelopment, vertical envelopment. A single envelopment is a variation of envelopment where a force attacks along one flank of an enemy force. A single envelopment is generally easier to control and does not require a significant number of forces. A double envelopment is a variation of envelopment where forces simultaneously attack along both flanks of an enemy force. A force seeking to execute a double envelopment must also have a substantial mobility advantage over defending forces. A unit performs a double envelopment by conducting a frontal attack to fix enemy forces in place while enveloping both of the enemy forces' flanks. A double envelopment generally requires more forces than a single envelopment and are more difficult to control. A vertical envelopment is a variation of envelopment where airdropped or air-landed troops attack an enemy's forces rear, flank, or both. A force seeking to execute a vertical envelopment requires the necessary vertical lift capability and indirect fire assets to suppress enemy air defense capability. Because of the forces required, normally only divisions and larger organizations can conduct double and vertical envelopments, since these organizations have the resources and the capability to control these envelopments. A vertical envelopment, by either airborne assault or air assault, allows the commander to overcome distances quickly, overfly barriers, and bypass enemy defenses. Extend the area over which the commander can exert influence. Leaves the enemy defenses more vulnerable to attack from the main body. Disperse reserve forces widely for survivability reasons while maintaining their capability for effective and rapid response. Exploit combat power by increasing tactical mobility. Seize key terrain to deny the enemy's use. Organization of forces. During a single or double envelopment, units organize their forces to perform two primary tasks: fixing the enemy force and executing the envelopment. Units conducting an envelopment task organize forces into a fixing force, enveloping force, security force, and a reserve. The only organizational difference between a single envelopment and double envelopment is that a double envelopment consists of two enveloping forces. The fixing force normally conducts a frontal attack to fix enemy forces in their current positions to prevent their escape and reduce their capability to react against the enveloping force. The fixing force should use the minimal amount of combat power to fix the enemy while ensuring the majority of combat power is in the enveloping force. During a double envelopment, commanders typically designate the most likely to succeed of the two envelopment operations as the main effort for resources. The enveloping force maneuvers behind the enemy's battle zone to defeat enemy forces in their positions, but from an unexpected direction. The security force prevents the enemy from discovering friendly dispositions, capabilities, and intentions, or hindering the envelopment. Units executing a vertical envelopment organize friendly forces into an air assault task force or an airborne task force. The Air Assault Task Force is a temporary group of integrated forces tailored to a specific mission under the command of a single headquarters. The Air Assault Task Force consists of an Air Assault Force and the Ground Assault Force. The Ground Assault Force is task-organized with enough combat power to seize or fix the objective or enemy force. The Airborne Task Force is organized by an assault echelon, follow-on echelon, and rear echelon. The assault echelon is task-organized with enough combat power to seize or fix the objective or enemy force. See FM3-99 for more information on airborne and air assault operations. Control measures. At a minimum, commanders assign an area for each unit participating in an envelopment. They also designate phase lines, support by fire and attack by fire positions, contact points, and appropriate fire coordination measures, such as an RFL, or boundary between converging forces, and any other control measures necessary to control the envelopment. Planning an envelopment. Successful envelopment planning requires knowing and understanding enemy forces and their capabilities. Units seek to maneuver the enveloping force around or over the enemy force's main defenses to secure objectives on the enemy force's flank or rear. From those objectives, the enveloping force can use its positional advantage to employ superior combat power against a defending enemy force oriented in the wrong direction. A unit uses information collection assets to determine the disposition and capabilities of enemy forces to detect and react to their operations. Units plan for the force conducting the envelopment to remain within supporting distance of the fixing force. Supporting distance is the distance between two units that can be traveled in time for one to come to the aid of the other and prevent its defeat by an enemy or ensure it regains control of a civil situation, ADP 3-0. Sustaining the enveloping force requires deliberate planning because only intermittent ground lines of communications, locks, between the echelon support area and the enveloping force may exist. Units develop branch and sequel plans to the envelopment operation to exploit the envelopment's success. These plans consider the transition to a pursuit in order to complete the destruction of the enemy force or to halt and pass forward the reserve or follow and support forces. Executing an envelopment. A successful envelopment depends largely on the degree of surprise units achieve against enemy forces or the use of overwhelming combat power. The envelopment's probability of success also increases when an enveloping force has superior mobility and intelligence, possesses air superiority, and has supporting efforts that fix the bulk of the enemy's forces in their current positions. Normally, units orient the majority of their combat power toward where they expect to engage enemy forces, while assuming risk by placing less combat power on their own flanks. The attacking unit creates an assailable enemy flank using whatever means necessary. The enveloping force then moves rapidly to exploit the situation before enemy forces strengthen an assailable flank by preparing positions in depth or by engaging their reserve. Rapid movement around the enemy force's flank is essential to prevent enemy forces from occupying previously prepared positions. Higher headquarters' supporting efforts attempt to prevent the enemy from reconstituting reserves from other portions of the enemy front. After the initial envelopment of one flank, which places enemy forces at a disadvantage, units have many options. They may choose to exploit success by generating additional combat power along the same axis. Units can destroy or defeat the enveloped enemy force in place or transition to another type of operation, such as an exploitation, pursuit, or encirclement. Turning movement. A turning movement is a form of maneuver in which the attacking force seeks to avoid the enemy's principal defensive positions by attacking to the rear of their current positions, forcing them to move or divert forces to meet the threat. A turning movement differs from an envelopment because the force conducting a turning movement seeks to make enemy forces displace from their current locations, whereas an enveloping force seeks to engage enemy forces in their current locations from an unexpected direction. It can also be conducted using waterborne or amphibious means. Units frequently transition this form of offensive maneuver from the attack into an exploitation or pursuit. The turning force must also be capable of operating outside supporting distances for a set time. Only divisions and above can execute a turning movement. This is due to these echelons possessing the organic resources to organize a turning force that can operate outside the supporting distance of the main body and force enemy units out of their current positions. Organization of forces. The task organization for a turning movement are the following: security force, diversion force, turning force, reserve. The security force performs security and reconnaissance tasks as part of its enabling operations. A diversion force is task organized to ensure the success of the turning force. The diversion force conducts operations, such as attacks designed to divert the enemy force's attention away from the turning force. The force conducting the turning movement is the turning force. The turning force conducts the echelon's main effort and is resourced appropriately. The reserve is positioned to support the turning force. However, the reserve can support the security or diversion force if required. Control measures. Units designate control measures as necessary to synchronize subordinate forces' operations. These control measures include phase lines, contact points, objectives, limits of advance, appropriate fire control measures. Planning a turning movement. Selecting the right terrain-oriented objective of a turning movement is of major importance to the success of the operation. This causes the enemy forces to relocate from their current position to meet the friendly force in a position away from their previous occupied position or risk catastrophic defeat. The unit's scheme of maneuver in a turning movement may vary depending on the specific situation and mission variables. In addition to common offensive planning considerations, units conducting a turning movement pay special attention to planning branches and sequels to the turning movement, including transitioning to an exploitation or pursuit, transitioning to a defense, linking up the turning force and diversion force, retrograding the turning force. After developing the tactical plan, units plan how the turning force maneuvers to its objective. They develop the turning force's movement, loading, and staging plans if they require outside transportation assets. Units plan to occupy key terrain that threatens the enemy force's survival or remain mobile and seek ways to exploit the turning force's success. If there is an early link-up with the main body during a turning movement, the turning force normally plans to defend the terrain required to protect itself. Once reinforcement or linkup with the main body occurs, units plan how to use the turning force to continue the attack or relieve the main body so it can prepare for subsequent missions. The distances between forces and the existence of intermittent locks magnify the problems inherent in providing sustainment to a maneuver force during a turning movement. Therefore, when planning a turning movement, units describe the sustainment conditions required or acceptable for the operation. Units consider the provision of all supplies and equipment required for mission accomplishment as an integral part of tactical planning. They plan and organize unit sustainment operations to support a rapid tempo of highly mobile and widely dispersed operations. Turning movements tend to have greater supporting distances and responsibilities. Sustainment planners recognize this and adjust their plans using available resources. Subordinate units carry only those supplies required to meet their immediate needs into the operation. Executing a turning movement. Successful turning movements threaten the enemy force into a dilemma. First, enemy forces must move from their original positions to meet the threat presented by the turning force. Often, enemy forces must commit available reserves against this new threat, which exposes their reserves to friendly fires. After the turning movement, enemy forces must engage the friendly force on ground that they have not chosen or prepared. The other option for enemy forces is to continue to hold the terrain they occupy at the risk of becoming enveloped and potentially encircled by friendly forces. Whenever possible, units conducting a turning movement try to reach the terrain-oriented objective that compels enemy forces to reposition prior to encountering them. Friendly forces finding their way into the enemy force's rear area to rapidly exploit the situation seek to achieve their objectives before the enemy can react. Rapid movement is essential to prevent enemy forces from occupying previously prepared positions in the enemy force's rear. The maneuver of the turning force is what causes enemy forces to leave their positions. The turning force normally conducts most of its operations outside the supporting range of the diversion force and possibly outside its supporting distance. The turning force must contain sufficient maneuver, functional, and multifunctional capabilities to operate independently for a specified period. Units organize the reserve to exploit success by using either the turning force or the diversion force. Infiltration. An infiltration is a form of maneuver in which an attacking force conducts undetected movement through or into an area occupied by enemy forces. Infiltration is also a march technique used well before encountering enemy forces to avoid enemy information collection assets. Infiltration occurs by land, water, air, or a combination of means. Moving and assembling forces covertly through enemy positions takes a lot of time. A successful infiltration requires the infiltrating force to avoid detection and engagement by enemy forces. Since this requirement limits the size and strength of the infiltrating force, and infiltrated forces alone can rarely defeat an enemy force, units use infiltration in conjunction with and in support of other forms of offensive maneuver. Units conduct infiltration to move all or a portion of a unit through gaps in the enemy force's defenses to reconnoiter known or templated enemy positions and conduct surveillance of named areas of interest and targeted areas of interest. Attack enemy-held positions from an unexpected direction. Occupy a support-by-fire position to support the main effort. Secure key terrain. Conduct ambushes and raids to destroy vital facilities and disrupt the enemy force's defensive structure by attacking enemy reserves, fire support and air defense systems, communications nodes, and sustainment elements. Conduct a covert breach of an obstacle or obstacle complex. Special operations forces and dismounted infantry units up to brigade size are best suited to conduct an infiltration. In some circumstances, armored and striker-equipped forces operating in small units can conduct an infiltration when the terrain can mask their force's movement signature. The proliferation of technology leads to increased situational understanding for both friendly and enemy forces, as well as an increased chance of detecting units conducting an infiltration. Understanding the capabilities of these technologies informs the decision as to whether an infiltration is feasible. Organization of forces. Infiltrating units generally organize into a security force and a main body. Normally, to be successful, an infiltrating force must avoid detection until it reaches its objective rally point. The infiltrating unit organizes the main body into one or more infiltrating elements. These elements are the largest size element possible that meet requirements for stealth and ease of movement. This organization increases control and the speed of the infiltration while providing responsive combat power. Units determine the exact size and number of infiltrating elements based on the situation. Units consider the following factors when determining how to organize available forces. Smaller infiltrating elements are not as easy to detect as larger elements and can get through smaller defensive gaps. Even the detection of one or two small elements by enemy forces may not prevent an infiltrating unit from accomplishing its mission. Larger infiltrating elements are easier to detect, and their discovery is more apt to endanger the success of the mission, but if compromised, are better equipped to react. A unit with many smaller infiltrating elements requires more time to complete the infiltration and needs more link-up points than a similar-sized unit with only a few and larger infiltrating elements. Many smaller infiltrating elements are also harder to control than fewer larger elements. If resources allow, units designate security forces that move ahead of, to the flanks of, and to the rear of each infiltrating element's main body. These security forces may be assigned either screen or guard missions. They determine the sizes and orientation of security elements based on the situation. Each infiltrating element is responsible for its own reconnaissance effort. Sustainment of an infiltrating force normally depends on the force's basic load of supplies and those medical and maintenance assets accompanying the infiltrating force. After completing the mission, units reopen locks to conduct normal sustainment operations. Control measures. Control measures for an infiltration include, at a minimum, one or more infiltration lanes, a LD or point of departure, PD, movement routes with associated start points, SPs, and release points, RPs, or a direction or axis of attack, link-up or rally points, including objective rally points, assault positions, one or more objectives, a limit of advance, phase lines, checkpoints, attack position. If it is not necessary for the entire infiltrating unit to reassemble to accomplish its mission, the objective may be broken into smaller objectives. Each infiltrating element would then move directly to its objective to conduct its mission. Planning an infiltration. The activities and functions associated with the process of planning an infiltration are the same as with any other offensive operation. That planning takes advantage of that unit's ability to surprise enemy forces. The planning process synchronizes the warfighting functions that support the infiltrating unit, especially precise information collection. Without precise, detailed intelligence, infiltration maneuvers become high-risk probing operations that can be costly and time-consuming. Careful planning, full information collection integration, detailed analysis, and OPSEC enable an infiltrating force to avoid an enemy force. This minimizes direct contact and maximizes surprise. Sustaining infiltrations requires detailed planning with regard to medical evacuation, maintenance support, and resupply classes of supply for the infiltrating unit. Unlike the other forms of maneuver, infiltration purposely maneuvers units out of sustainment range for longer periods to surprise the enemy. The prolonged time away from medical evacuation, maintenance, and resupply of classes of supply increases the risk to the infiltrating unit, which requires detailed planning to mitigate. After identifying gaps or weaknesses in the enemy force's defensive positions, units assign infiltration lanes, contact points, and objectives to subordinate units. These objectives afford the infiltrating force positions of advantage over enemy forces. The objectives are not required to be to the rear of the enemy force. Each subordinate unit picks one or more routes within the assigned lane and establishes additional contact points, rally points, assault points, and other control measures as required. Units require routes within an infiltration lane to be far enough apart to prevent an infiltrating element on one route from seeing other infiltrating elements, but close enough so that an infiltrating element could switch quickly to another route if the situation requires it. They may use single or multiple infiltration lanes depending on the infiltrating force's size, the amount of detailed information on enemy dispositions, terrain, time allowed, and number of lanes available. Units require each route to provide infiltrating elements cover and concealment while avoiding known enemy and civilian locations and movement routes as much as possible. If possible, the subordinate unit selects the exact routes during the preparation phase after reconnoitering each infiltration lane. That subordinate decides whether the unit infiltrates as a whole or as smaller elements, depending on the enemy force's density and strength. A single infiltration lane facilitates navigation, control, and reassembly. Requires the existence or creation of only one gap in the enemy force's position. Reduces the area for which detailed intelligence is required. Multiple infiltration lanes require the existence or creation of more gaps in the enemy force's security area. Reduce the possibility of compromising the entire force. Increase difficulty with maintaining control. The sizes and numbers of infiltrating elements are major considerations for units when deciding whether to use a single lane or multiple infiltration lanes. If the infiltration takes place using multiple elements, contingency plans must address the following situations. A lead element, possibly the security force, makes contact, but the trail elements have not started infiltrating. A lead element infiltrates successfully but compromises one or more trailing elements. A link-up point is compromised. An element is isolated by the enemy. The infiltration plan also addresses the following considerations. Availability of supporting fires throughout the operation. Link-up or extraction of the infiltrating unit after mission completion. Sustainment of the infiltrating force during the operation, including casualty evacuation. Tactical deception operations. Link-up of various infiltrating elements. Command and control of forces. Positioning of combat vehicles to support the infiltrating elements. Use of limited visibility and rough terrain to mask movement and reduce possible detection. Infiltration of the largest elements possible to maintain speed and control. Rehearsals. Abort criteria. Critical friendly zones. Planned recognition signals and link-up procedures for the infiltration should be simple and quick. If there have not been any firing or other noises, users of signals should consider the probability of detection. However, if there have already been assaults, artillery, and small arms fire, stealth is less of a concern. A lack of time and the short distance involved in many infiltration operations may make conducting formal link-up procedures unnecessary. Preparing an infiltration. Once the objective, infiltration lanes, and link-up or rally points are selected, commanders direct information collection operations to update and confirm intelligence requirements. Friendly information collection operations identify enemy sensors and surveillance systems. Units then revise the plan to reflect current conditions in the assigned area. Executing an infiltration. Moving undetected during an infiltration requires a considerable amount of time. The infiltrating unit moves from its assembly area or current position through the start point and then continues moving along the infiltration route to a release point. If small elements are conducting the infiltration, the unit uses a series of link-up points to reassemble into a coherent unit. If the complete unit is conducting the infiltration, the forward security force begins its movement first and the main body follows. The distance between the forward security force and the main body depends on the mission variables. The security force must be far enough ahead of the main body so that it can either deploy or move to another route if the forward security force discovers enemy forces. The forward security force in an infiltration needs enough time to move in a stealthy and secure manner. Enemy units should not be able to move undetected between the forward security force and the main body. As the infiltrating unit moves, the security force reports the cover and concealment of each route, enemy activity, location of danger areas and link-up points, enemy activity on the objective, and other combat information. The unit attempts to avoid enemy and civilian contact. However, contact does not always mean the mission is compromised. The infiltrating unit engages targets first with indirect fires to avoid revealing its presence and exact location. If necessary, the forward security force conducts actions on contact while the main body moves to another route, reconstitutes a forward security force, and continues the mission. If the main body makes contact unexpectedly, it either bypasses the encountered enemy force or attacks the enemy force if the enemy has little combat power or cannot be bypassed. During an infiltration, the forward security force ignores ineffective enemy fire and continues to move. The infiltrating unit's elements move to an assembly area or an objective rally point to consolidate and reorganize their combat power, refine the plan, and conduct any last-minute coordination before continuing the mission. The unit then conducts those tasks needed to accomplish its mission, which could be an attack, raid, ambush, seizing key terrain, or information collection. Units may need to abort an infiltration operation if the mission variables change during the infiltration, creating a condition where units can no longer accomplish the infiltration. Examples of changes that might trigger such an action include: significant portions of the infiltrating force's combat power are lost through navigation errors, enemy action, accidents, or maintenance failures. Movement or significant reinforcement of a force-oriented objective. Detection of the infiltration by enemy forces. Changes in the tactical situation that make the mission no longer appropriate. Units develop criteria for aborting the infiltration as part of the planning process. They transmit the decision to abort the infiltration to all appropriate headquarters for action and information.